Mr. Speaker, can I first thank members and honourable members for their contribution to this evening's debate? The speeches have genuinely been a testament both to the wealth of experience and the expertise contained within this House, and also the concerns, questions and indeed fears of many of its members. In particular, I know all members will have been grateful for the speeches given by former Foreign and Defence Secretaries on both sides of the House. Now, given the time available and the number of members who have spoken, I cannot hope to acknowledge all the contributions, but I do wish to place on record both my respect and my gratitude for the tone of the debate, the nature of the interventions and the sincerity of the speakers. Mr. Speaker, let me start on the common ground. This House stands united in its revulsion at the reports of the use of chemical weapons being deployed against innocent men, women and children in Syria. The use of chemical weapons is not just deplorable, it is both immoral and it is illegal. Since the Geneva Protocol of 1925, the use of such weapons has been prohibited. Honourable members are right, therefore, to be horrified and revulsed by reports of their use, and also to be deeply concerned as to how to protect the international prohibition of their use that has been in place for decades. There is also common ground across the House in recognising the suffering and the scale of the slaughter in Syria. In the last 2 years, over 100,000 have been killed and more than 6 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. There are already 2 million refugees who have fled Syria, 1 million of whom are children. So all of us should be proud of the humanitarian aid that the British government and British NGOs have provided to help alleviate the suffering of the people of Syria and of the wider region. But now, as the crisis deepens and the pressures on Syria's neighbours grow, the international community is right to intensify the diplomatic and humanitarian efforts to help relieve the suffering and prevent further bloodshed. Ultimately, a way will have to be found back to talks. We all recognise that, and that the process to get to talks will need to involve not just the Russians, but discussions with neighbouring countries, Jordan, the Lebanon, and yes, including Iran, as well as those within Syria. And Mr. Speaker, in light of these recent attacks and the wider circumstances, we all recognise that on Syria, the House faces the prospect of grave and difficult choices. All of them involve real risks and challenges. There are no good choices available, and that includes the choice not to act. Every judgment will have consequences, and all the consequences of any judgment cannot be known at the time of exercising that judgment. Now, as the opposition, we believe that our national interests are best protected not by rushed action, which seeks to bypass vital steps that the Security Council could and should take, but by multilateral efforts and a world order governed by rules. There have been reports in the media that we are seeking a UN moment in Syria, but Mr. Speaker, as the Leader of the Opposition told this House earlier, these are not our words. The right response by the British Government is not to engineer a UN moment, but to adhere to UN processes and to international law. I freely acknowledge the limitations and indeed the past failures of the United Nations, but it remains the indispensable institution of international law, and that is why my party continues to believe that the United Nations should be the focus both of diplomacy and of action. Now, Mr. Speaker, let me turn to the substance of the amendment that we will be voting for this evening. We believe that this House deserves and the country expects more clarity than is set out in the wording of the government's motion. Specifically, our amendment sets out a roadmap for decision, with clear steps that would need to be taken and conditions that would need to be met before the use of force could be authorised. So, Mr. Speaker, let me now address directly the point made by the Right Honourable and Learned Member for North East Fife, a man for whom I have a great deal of respect, as to the differences between the opposition amendment and the government's motion and why they matter. The test set by our amendment for evidence of the Syrian regime's responsibility for the use of chemical weapons is, and I quote directly, compelling evidence. This test is absent from the wording of the government's motion. I do not believe, not least given past mistakes, that satisfying ourselves that the evidence of Assad's responsibility is compelling is too high a hurdle to expect. Indeed, I would suggest that the public would expect nothing less ahead of any UK military action in Syria. So that threshold should be stated explicitly in the motion. Second, our amendment states explicitly that the United Nations Security Council would need to have considered and voted on the evidence presented by the UN weapons inspectors. No such commitment to a Security Council vote is contained in the government's motion, and indeed the Prime Minister's remarks earlier today did not once make explicit a reference to a vote on the UN of the UN Security Council on a resolution in relation to Syria. This matters because surely to exhaust and be seen to exhaust the processes of the United Nations would be crucial to seeking the broadest possible support for any subsequent military action based on an alternative legal base. Such a vote, and let us freely acknowledge quite probably a veto in the Security Council of the United Nations, would also make clear where each member of the Security Council stands. Third, our amendment states that in making a decision to commit force, regard must be had to the potential consequences in the region. This is a region experiencing unprecedented turmoil. Syria today, as a nation state, is dissolving before us. That disintegration has already exacerbated sectarian tensions across the region, destabilised neighbours, and caused quite horrific refugee and humanitarian crises. It is surely reasonable for the impact of any military action to be explicitly considered in this context, and this consideration should appear on the face of the motion. Fourth, our amendment specifies that any decision to authorise force would be time limited. Now, given the deep anxiety in this House and across our nation about the risk of deepening and ever longer engagement in Syria, this would mean the House would not give the government authority for an open-ended military commitment. Mr. Speaker, these are material issues, and so I urge members on all sides of this House to reflect upon those differences and to support our amendment. Surely also members can understand that the need for such a clear and considered roadmap to decision is made all the more crucial when in recent days there have been real and growing concerns in the country that we are being pushed too quickly towards military action on a timetable set elsewhere without due process being followed and the necessary steps being taken. Indeed, the case for action is not helped by the suggestion from some of our allies that the objective has more to do with punishment than with protection. Let me be very clear with this House. Punitive action, action motivated by a desire to punish, would have no basis in international law. To be legal, the objective of any such mission would need to be to protect the people of Syria, not to punish the rulers of Syria. I'm keen to make a little progress. Mr. Speaker, let us be candid as to why we are here. I will take interventions, but let me develop that point. Let us be candid as to why we are gathered here this evening. Once the government accepted our case late yesterday that there needed to be a further vote of the House of Commons when the evidence is available to us, today's debate truly became a parliamentary recall in search of a public rationale. Then, this morning, it was reported on the BBC that the House was being asked by the government motion to agree tonight to the principle of British military action in Syria, without a vote having taken place at the United Nations Security Council or that body, nor indeed this House having yet had sight of the UN Weapons Inspector's report. While it would be wrong to rule out the use of force before the evidence is before us, it would also be wrong to rule force in before the evidence is before us. That is why Labour has tabled an amendment. That is why we will be voting for our amendment. And that is why we will be urging members on all sides of this House to support that amendment.